Started. Welcome everybody to the 40th annual Cowen Healthcare Conference. My name is Dushyant Srinivasan. I'm one of the associates on the biotechnology team. Very excited that Altimmune could be here, and it's my pleasure to introduce Vipin Garg, CEO.
Thank you, Dushyant. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. Before I begin, just a quick reminder about forward-looking statements. I encourage you to read our SEC statements for a full disclosure of the risks associated with our business. I would also like to point out that today our presentation is going to be slightly different from our more recent presentations. As you know, one of the technologies that we have is our proprietary intranasal vaccine platform technology. And we believe it's ideally suited for rapid response in a pandemic situation such as coronavirus or COVID-19. In fact, on Friday morning, we announced that we have completed the first step in the development toward the development of a coronavirus vaccine. And we would like to tell you more about that before we tell you about the rest of our programs. So what I would like to do is invite Dr. Scott Roberts, who is our internal expert in vaccines. He's our chief scientific officer. So Scott will give you an update on the current status of our coronavirus vaccine program. Scott?
Thanks, Vipin, and good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to update you on the progress on the vaccine, as Vipin indicated. As most of you probably know by now, the virus that causes COVID-19 has infected close to 90,000 people. Today I read there's over 3,000 deaths, and there are confirmed cases of COVID disease in at least 60 countries worldwide. So. If this is not a pandemic, I think the likelihood is high that it will be a pandemic soon. You know, it's so early going that there's so much more we don't know about the virus and disease than what we do know. But some of the things we know are that it is a respiratory disease, which means that its primary route of spread is through aerosols, and those aerosols coming in contact with mouth and nose and other mucosal tissues. So mucosal immunity could be important. The mechanisms of protection by immunity are not known. It's likely that antibody will be an important part of that protection, but there are examples, for example, with the original SARS virus back in 2003, that T-cell immunity was important for eventual clearance of the virus. And so not knowing exactly what sort of protection is required represents a barrier of sorts. And then not unique to the COVID-19 situation, but certainly of all global responses and pandemics, is the logistics associated with vaccine distribution and vaccine administration. These can represent significant hurdles when considering a response on a global scale. So let me tell you exactly what it is we're developing. It's going to be a single dose intranasal vaccine for COVID-19 disease. It's based on our vaccine platform. We have a number of clinical products that are based on the same platform, and this vaccine approach is especially well suited for pandemic response based on the speed by which we can design it and obtain it, and the type of immunities that it produces. At its heart, it's a replication-deficient vector expressing the SARS-CoV-2, that's the virus that causes COVID-19, spike protein, that's the envelope protein. As I said, single-dose intranasal spray will be intended to establish immunity at the site of infection. This is the mucosal immunity, represents a first line of defense, and has the potential to neutralize the virus before it even gains a foothold. And because it is a platform technology, we're able to leverage all of the knowledge we've gained, both from a CMC and manufacturing standpoint, and also from a regulatory and clinical standpoint, to rapidly move the timelines forward and getting this into a clinical trial. It has a robust manufacturing process that will allow us to scale to millions of doses quickly. And the inherent stability of the vector means that we may be able to distribute it without cold chain, which could vastly make it more efficient and less expensive for distribution. So at the bottom, we have a little cartoon of what it is we do. We drop the gene of interest, shown in green, into the adenoviral genome. What pops out during the derivation process is a viral vector, shown there on the right. And following intranasal administration, that vector infects the cells of the upper respiratory tract. And by doing that, it becomes very different from the vast majority of vaccines out there. Most vaccines present the protein, the antigen, outside the cell and expect the immune system to respond to it. We express the antigen inside the cell and allows for a much better immune response, and I'll show you some of that data. So why are we so optimistic about this vaccine and why it'll be an important armament in the fight against COVID-19? Well, as I said, it's based on the same platform technology as another respiratory virus vaccine, that for influenza. So NasalVax is an intranasal influenza vaccine. We've recently completed a phase 2 clinical trial with that vaccine in healthy subjects. And some key take-home points here I think are important because they really underline how all of the vaccines in this platform will behave. So first of all, we achieved 100% seroprotection in vaccinated individuals. So for flu, it's known how much antibody is necessary to protect you from the flu, and we met that level and surpassed it. It activated multiple arms of the immune system, and on the right-hand side there is an example of that. We get a serum antibody, which is throughout the body and systemic. Importantly, we developed mucosal immunity against the virus in the nose and the upper respiratory tract. And we also established that we had cellular immunity. And again, cellular immunity is important for clearing the infection. When we looked at how long this immune response lasts, for example, the antibody response, it lasted at least 13 months. That's quite long for a single intranasal dose. It was well tolerated, all of the doses we looked at. In fact, the safety profile is really indistinguishable from placebo. So where are we in this timeline? It was at the end of January that the sequence became available for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. That's all we need in order to do our work and to get about making a vaccine is the digital sequence. By that time, we saw that things were getting out of control in Wuhan and it was already spreading within China, and we thought that this could be an important disease for the population, and decided to develop the vaccine. So that was at the very beginning of February. In the 4 weeks since then, we've completed the design and synthesis of the vector. We have that in hand, and we will now move towards scaling enough material to use A, for manufacturing, and B, to do the animal safety, efficacy, and immunogenicity studies. Moving on this aggressive path, we expect to be able to do a phase 1 clinical trial as early as August 15th if the other factors that are necessary are able to be brought together, but we will be ready. So I want to go back just in summing up here to the original challenges that I laid out in the first slide and kind of review them in the context of the vaccine that we're developing. So infection occurs through the mucosal surfaces like the nose and mouth, and I've shown you or at least told you that the intranasal delivery establishes mucosal immunity in these areas, and that provides a first line of defense that could block the infection from even establishing. Secondly, the immune mechanism of protection is not well understood. That's true. Fortunately, we're able to activate multiple arms of the immune system, antibody, mucosal, and cellular immunity. So one or more of these will be important in the clearance, and we have all of them to choose from. And then finally, the logistics associated with vaccine distribution and administration. And the fact that we have a stable vaccine to allow cold chain-free distribution and the administration can be done easily, painlessly, and without needles and sharps represents a real advantage and an important point with respect to efficiency. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Vipin to tell you what else the company is up to.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for summarizing the COVID-19 vaccine program at Altimmune, and we'll continue to update you as we make progress towards developing a vaccine. So looking at the rest of our pipeline, we are focused on liver diseases, synthetic peptides. So we've got two technology platforms. We talked about our intranasal vaccine technology. We also have a synthetic peptide technology platform that we're using for mainly for liver diseases. ALT-801 is a GLP-1 glucagon dual agonist that we're developing for NASH, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But ALT-801 basically is advancing into phase one development later this year. HepTcell is a T-cell activator that we are developing for chronic hepatitis B. We have already completed a phase one program on HepTcell, and we are advancing this into phase two development again later in 2020. We also have a third peptide-based program, which is a conjugated immunostimulant for cancer. This is a research stage program, earlier stage program, and we have some exciting data on it. But today, in the interest of time, I'll mainly focus on our NASH and our hepatitis B program. So let's look at NASH and NAFLD. NAFLD is a precursor to NASH. NAFLD stands for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. NAFLD is present in up to 90% of obese patients, and approximately 20% of NAFLD patients develop NASH. They progress to NASH. Up to 40% of NASH patients develop NAFLD even after a liver transplant. So basically, even after a liver transplant, if you don't take away the root cause of the disease comes back. The underlying disease is still there. What we do know that if a patient loses more than 10% of their body weight, then the NASH resolution occurs in 90% of the cases. So basically, the cornerstone of the treatment of NASH is really treatment of obesity. If you can get patient to lose more than 10% of their body weight, chances are you'll be able to resolve NASH. And that's really the area that we are focused on. We're focusing on this root cause of disease, that is obesity. On this table here, I've listed a number of drugs that are in development for the treatment of NASH. In fact, there's quite a list. What is striking here is that none of these drugs have any impact on body weight. Essentially, none of them have any appreciable body weight reduction. And that's what we are trying to do with our GLP-1 glucagon dual agonist. So it's highly differentiated in how we are approaching the treatment of NASH. GLP-1s have already been around for many years now, and they've shown modest weight loss in humans, and are quite effective treatments for diabetes. What we're doing here, we're combining GLP-1 with glucagon. So GLP-1 has indirect effects on the liver. GLP-1 receptors are not found in the liver, whereas glucagon receptors are in the liver. So we're getting the benefit of both indirect effect of GLP-1 on the liver as well as direct effect of glucagon in the liver. The combination of these two results into significant reduction in body weight and all of the other consequences of the benefits of having that reduction in body weight. This is the structure of ALT-801. It's a rationally designed and highly differentiated peptide. One of the key differentiation here is that it has one-to-one balance between the two functionalities, the GLP-1 and the glucagon. So the two agonisms are perfectly balanced in terms of the activity. It also has a number of other modifications. In particular, it uses a proprietary U-port domain, which is a surfactant-like molecule. and really provides improved properties, both improved PK profile as well as better GI tolerability. What it does, what this U-port domain does, it slows the entry of the peptide into the blood, lowering the peak concentration or Cmax of the peptide to improve tolerability, and it also significantly extends the half-life. So basically, the peptide is you know remains in circulation for longer, so it's conducive to once a week dosing, and also at the same time reduces the potential for GI tolerability. So just to go through the development that we have completed so far, here is a list of non-clinical studies that we have completed on ALT-801. I won't go through each and every one of these studies, but just to make the point that we have conducted a thorough investigation of this of the compound characteristics, and I'll show you some of the data from the animal models in terms of how what's the efficacy of this compound. So here on this slide, we are looking at reduction in body weight, and we are comparing ALT-801 with semaglutide, which is a GLP-1 agonist. So we are comparing GLP-1 agonist with our dual GLP-1 glucagon dual agonist. As you can see, the green line there is the vehicle group. The control group, there's really no appreciable change in body weight. Semaglutide has some impact on body weight, but you can see ALT-801 is clearly superior to semaglutide, approximately twice the weight loss of semaglutide. And more importantly, so approximately 25% reduction in body weight, and more importantly, it brings these animals back to lean normal range. Another important parameter to measure in NASH is reduction in liver fat. You know, the body weight leads to accumulation of fat in the liver. So here we're looking at in the control group, you can see there is significant fat in the liver. Semaglutide on the right has some improvement over the vehicle. Elafibranor, another drug being in development for NASH, has significant improvement, but ALT-801 is clearly superior in terms of reduction in liver fat. Essentially, it brings these livers back to normal compared to the other two treatments. Another measure that we have looked at on this slide is a change in NAFLD activity score. This is a composite of three different measurements. And again, we are comparing to elafibranor and semaglutide. Both semaglutide and elafibranor have significant effect, but ALT-801, once again, is clearly superior to both of them. Here we are looking at two different dosages of ALT-801, so you can see a nice dose response, and the high dose is superior to both elafibranor as well as semaglutide. Another very important measure of liver function is plasma ALT. And once again, you can see that plasma ALT levels were normalized with ALT-801, and again, superior to either semaglutide or elafibranor. What about fibrosis? Another very important measure, another very important parameter here we're looking at. And again, these are two markers of fibrosis that we are measuring. And in both cases, once again, 801 does an excellent job of bringing them down and reducing the levels of these fibrosis markers. So overall, everything that we have looked at, ALT-801 had superior performance compared to the other two treatments that we compared it to. So basically what it leads to is that if you look at the differentially regulated genes compared to ALT-801 compared it to semaglutide or elafibranor, what we are seeing here is that more of a pleiotropic effect of ALT-801. In other words, the number of genes that are regulated by each compound, ALT-801 has significantly higher number of genes that are regulated by this compared to either elafibranor or semaglutide. So to summarize, preclinical results show clearly superior reduction in nearly all measures of NASH. We looked at body weight, NAS, ALT, the plasma ALT levels, liver fat, and collagen. In summary, ALT-801 improved metabolic function as exhibited through pleiotropic effect and preclinical testing across multiple pathways involved in NASH, and it resulted in more profound suppression of genes associated with, once again, with multiple markers of NASH. So our plan here is to proceed with the phase one trials later this year, and I'll give you a timeline in a few minutes on ALT-801. Hep T cell, as I mentioned at the beginning, is a T cell stimulant that we are developing for chronic hepatitis B. Hepatitis B is a significant problem, approximately 300 million patients around the world, approximately 2 million patients in the U.S., and today there is really no treatment for chronic hepatitis B. The currently available antivirals, while they can you can manage the disease, they don't clear the chronic infection, so the infection is still there. The key here is to really wake up the dormant T cells, and that's what Hep T cell is designed to do. In order to cure the disease, one has to break the T cell immune tolerance, and that's really what Hep T cell is designed to do. Here is some data from our phase one study, where we're looking at safety and immunogenicity of Hep T cell. Again, it was well tolerated with no liver flares or autoimmune events. It breaks immune tolerance in chronic hepatitis B patients, as you can see, and the T cell response was very strong in combination with the adjuvant IC31. So in summary, Hep T cell is designed to restore the immune control of infection instead of targeting the viral pathway, and it really targets all of the HBV genotypes. We believe that it's a complementary approach to either currently approved antivirals as well as other antiviral products in development. And our plan is to move this program into phase two development later this year, and then eventually even exploit the immune activation of Hep T cell in combination with other novel HBV therapeutics. Finally, we also have a program in development in partnership with BARDA. We have actually had an ongoing partnership with BARDA for almost 10 years now. This is for an intranasal anthrax vaccine that we are developing in partnership with them. And we have a total contract value of approximately $133 million from BARDA to develop this. And this is actually a complementary program, a complementary approach to coronavirus. It uses the same technology platform that we're using for our COVID-19 vaccine development. So in terms of our upcoming milestones, we are expecting to have a very active next 12 to 18 months. For NasoShield, the anthrax vaccine program, we're expecting to dose our first patient in our phase 1b human study in the second quarter of this year in 2020, and expecting to have the results from that trial sometime towards the end of Q3 or the beginning of Q4 of this year. For Hep T cell, we're expecting to have first patient dose in the phase two study in the Q3 of 2020, and then the data readout towards the end of 2021. For ALT-801, our NASH program, we're doing multiple studies that we are planning later this year, a single ascending dose study as well as a multiple ascending dose study. The multiple ascending dose study will be a 6-week study. We expect to have the first patient dosed in the fourth quarter of this year, and with data coming for the 6-week multiple dose study in the towards the end of the first quarter of 2021. We're also planning to initiate a 12-week study in parallel with the 6-week study, and then expect to have data from that study in the middle of next year. So as you can see, we are entering a very data-rich period on multiple programs that we are developing. So, and this is our management team. We've put together a very strong team with experience in drug discovery development, as well as in business development. With that, thank you very much. We have a breakout session in Boston University room. Thank you.